The book of Revelation says in the last days during the tribulation, God's going to seal with a mark on the forehead 144,000 of the tribes of Israel. Except for Dan, he names the ones that will be sealed. Now, there are strange reasons given for leaving Dan out. Is it possible that having been reminded that God gave the kingdom to David, they were told that when they broke off the 10 tribes to the north and Jeroboam was seated on the throne. Ephraim was promised that out of her would come many kings and many nations. But at the same time, the prophet reminds them that the true God-determined king of the tribes of Israel, even the 10 to the north, can only be approved and blessed of God if he's of the line of David, because God gave that kingdom to the seed of David. Now, if you were one of those 10 tribes, and you were settled between the Tigris River and the Caspian Sea, it's speculation. Understand that. Speculation. If you were one of those tribes and you were settled between the Tigris River and the Caspian Sea about 722 B.C., you're made to serve in Sargon's forces. You are intermingled with the Medes that are rather loosely under. For 2,500 years, the Persians and the Medes have bragged that whomever conquered them, they conquered. That's the source of their arrogant sense of superiority. When the Muslims came, that's why Iran became the seed of that Shiite sect of which Khomeini is a part, that broke off from the Sunni sect of the Islamic faith. They became the center of that rebel splinter that gave to Iran its own identity. Now, if you were settled with the tribes, you would know that everything that Moses prophesied came true, and everything that God said came true. And your worst days were when you were under a king not of the seed of David. Am I wrong? That makes sense to you? Just speculate. Number two, you would revere Moses because the only scripture you would have would be the Pentateuch, his product. You're with the master horsemen, rebels and nomads. They've wandered down from the steppes of southern Russia and western Mongolia. If you get a chance to rebel and you set up a kingdom, whom would you look for as a king? Of the seed of David. Right? But the seed of David's down in Judah. The daughters, you sure don't know where they are. They went down to Egypt. In fact, when your rebellion starts, Judah hasn't yet fallen completely to Nebuchadnezzar. Got that? To whom will you look? What if? Huh? What if? Let's go home. My mom said, we're not going home. What if? to ask you another question. Can I ask you another question? Huh? Another question. Is that all right? Ask you another question? Let's assume you were a descendant of Zara. What chapter is that in Genesis? Huh? Did you find that chapter for me? Let me read that again. 38th chapter of Genesis. This chapter is more exciting than Saturday Night Live. I'm not going to read it tonight. You remember Tamar? She deceived her father-in-law, played the harlot, that old rascal, thinking she was a prostitute. I mean, he paid through the nose. He gave her things that she then could prove to him later he was the father. She became pregnant of Judah. And it came to pass in the time of her travail, verse 27, behold, twins were in her womb. It came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. It came to pass as he drew back his hand that, behold, his brother came out. She said, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee. Therefore his name was called Phares, which means breach. Afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand. Now this midwife knew that the children being born were of Judah. And they were in a society of primogeniture where the firstborn got the rights of the tribe or the family. And Judah had the promise. He's the kingly line. She knows that. So when the hand came out of the womb, she put the scarlet thread on it because that proves that's really the firstborn. Hand goes back. Out comes Phares. Afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand. And his name was called Zara. That is dawn. Have you ever studied the history of the scarlet or red knights? The knights of the red branch in Ireland? You haven't studied some of these things? His name was called Zara. Let's go to Matthew. Oh, Matthew. This is fun. This is fun. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judas and his brethren. That's Judah. And Judah begat Phares and Zerah of Tamar. That's just what we read. It doesn't say another word about Zerah. How come Zerah's dangling out there? Huh? And Phares begat Esrom, and Esrom begat Aram, and Aram begat Amminadab, and Amminadab begat Naasson, and Naasson begat Solomon, and Solomon begat Boaz of Rachab, and Boaz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David the king, and David the king begat Solomon of her that had been the wife of Uriah, and Solomon begat Rehoboam, and Rehoboam begat Abiah, and Abiah begat Asa, and Asa begat Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat begat Joram, and Joram begat Uzziah, and Uzziah begat Jonathan, and Jonathan begat Achish, and Achish begat Ezekias, and Ezekias begat Manasseh, and Manasseh begat Amon, and Amon begat Josias, and Josias begat Jeconias and his brethren about the time they were carried away to Babylon. And after they were brought to Babylon, Jeconias begat Salathiel, and Salathiel begat Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel begat Abiud, and that's enough. You notice there's no Zedekiah? You know Zedekiah is not there? Because it's the line of David from Josiah to Jehoiakim that is traced on down to Jesus. Zedekiah, when Jehoiakim was taken into bondage, Nebuchadnezzar took another of the seed of David, made him king, and made him take an oath that he'd be loyal to the king of Babylon, which he later violated. Zedekiah is then cut off. So we got Zedekiah not even in the list, though Zedekiah was of the seed of David, and his daughters went with Jeremiah to Egypt, and we left them there, escaping. And Zerah's hanging here. Now, there are some other genealogies of Zerah. You interested in Zerah at all? We left Zerah sort of hanging at one time. You interested in Zerah at all? Now, what if you were over there between the Caspian Sea and the Tigris River and you had rebelled and you got a chance as the Assyrian kingdom is smashed and is being divided among the Chaldeans and the Persians and the Medes, and Nebuchadnezzar is down south solidifying his gains, and you're over here and Darius talks of the revolt, and you have a chance to set up a kingdom of your own, and you're going to march to the north into unknown places. You become super horsemen. What would you look for? A descendant of David or a descendant of Jeroboam? Come on, you asked me earlier, what'd I do, lose you? That's right. That's right. By the way, while they were over in bondage, they not only encountered the Medes, agrarian, nomadic people that had settled between the Caspian Sea, Lake Van, and the Tigris River, had also spread down into Persia and had spread into Afghanistan and down into India. They dwelt there a while. I brought tonight this parenthesis. I mean, you know, I just got into J.R. trying to figure out if he'd gone broke yet, and they changed to another subject, so I figured I'd do it too. This is Paths of Faith by John A. Hutchinson, Claremont Graduate School. It's a study of comparative religions. And my textbook was G.F. Moore. Well, this is a pretty good one. He talks about Zoroastrianism. He says, the Parsis of India, numbering slightly over 100,000, a few thousand remaining Zoroastrians of Iran, are the sole remaining representatives of Zoroastrianism, which is the smallest of the world's living religions. Parsiism does not accept converts, but maintains itself as the faith of a hereditary community located largely in and around Bombay. It is the legacy of a great tradition. Zoroaster, or more accurately, Zarathustra, was apparently one of the great figures of the Axis Age of the 7th and 6th centuries B.C. Those dates mean anything to you? That's when the 10 tribes were settled in that area, which is northwestern Iran and northern Iraq of today. All comparative religion scholars, as I said, I was going to do my doctoral dissertation on this, and we're covering mountains of material and drawing on, for the first time since I've been here, the background that I laid on the shelf years ago. And I made a reference I corrected the other night, hit me like a bomb, to the Boxer Rebellion. It's the Taiping Rebellion, not the Boxer. I did a term paper at the graduate level on the Taiping Rebellion. It was brought about by a Chinese young man that picked up a tract that was about Jesus Christ, and he convinced himself he was a half-brother of Jesus Christ and led the bloodbath, not the Boxer, but the Taiping Rebellion across China. I mentioned, and we'll come to him again, the most successful in terms of influence, false messiah of the Jews, who just prior to 1066, on a basis of belief that the world was coming to an end, because of the ravages of the 30-year war that had just preceded it, convinced himself, I believe, and others, that he was the Messiah. His claims were dashed as he was forced under persecution and threat of death to become Islamic at Constantinople, as the Turks caught him and tortured him. All through comparative religion, this claim hit me in the face, and I was going to do a doctoral dissertation arguing the opposite. Its founder, Zoroaster, was the religion, or Zoroastrianism was religion of the vast Iranian or Persian Empire. Both Judaism and Christianity show Zoroastrian influences in the figure of Satan and in the hosts of angels surrounding both God and Satan. All through comparative religions, and you that haven't had occasion to study it, but this is one of the great founder religions of the world, Zoroastrianism, though its numbers now are down. There was a time when it totally dominated. Darius' conversion to Zoroastrianism made the Medo-Persian Empire, one of the great empires of the world, Zoroastrian. All comparative religion studies I've done credit Zoroaster with originating monotheism, an abstract god, and the Satan-God dualism in the eternal world, and claim that it influenced Judaism and Christianity. The opposite is true. If a Chinese man can read a tract about Christ and convince himself he's the half-brother of Jesus Christ and lead the Taiping Rebellion, if a man in the 30-year war can read the prophecies of Messiah and convince himself he is the deliverer, Zoroaster, living, I say, when was he born? I'll show you what the scholars say. I want to read this. There is the widest scholarly disagreement concerning the dates of his life. One estimate places him at 1500 B.C., another at 3000 B.C., still another at 6000 B.C., another 628 to 551 B.C. The crucial clue goes to a date in relationship to Alexander, which arbitrarily is set to the destruction of Persepolis in the Iranian, or what was the Persian Empire at the time, the Medo-Persian Empire, and that's an arbitrary date. The best dates place him somewhere around the 7th or 6th century B.C., exactly the time that the tribes of Israel, the kingdom of Israel, was placed in the territory, the area where his religion and his faith was born. It is a cataclysmic shift from the religion of the Arians and the religion of the Iranians. Brand new. I contend, and there is nobody can offer evidence to the contrary, that instead of Zoroastrianism influencing Judaism and Christianity, the ten tribes renewed in their focus on the teachings of Moses in the habits of reciting the Pentateuch. A new religion of the book. A new telling of the story of Moses, who got his revelation as the prophet of God from the mountain. The recognition from the stories of Moses of the competing forces, Satan and God wrestling for the purposes of this world. That's the source. Now, like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, Zoroastrianism is a religion of a book. In addition to the predominant metaphorical imagery of sovereignty or kingship, that comes out of Judaism. In this monotheistic understanding of religious experience, man is related to God in terms of obedience or disobedience to the divine will. That's straight off Mount Sinai from Moses. Zoroaster presents himself to us as a prophet, a man who out of deep conviction is called to speak for God to man. That's Moses. At the age of 30, he received the first of a series of revelations which made him a prophet. Standing beside the Dite River, he was approached by the angel Bohumanah, good thought, who appeared as a colossal figure 9 times human size, commanding Zoroaster to lay aside his body and come up into the presence of the heavenly court. That's straight out of the Transfiguration Mountain experience of the book of Exodus. It's straight out of God who hides Moses in a cleft of the rock and hides him with the palm of his hand and lets him just catch a glimpse of God's hinder parts. There God himself instructed the prophet in the content of the new faith which he was to decimate. The heart of Zoroaster's message was faith in the one God who had revealed his will to the prophet and through the prophet to mankind. Zoroaster's monotheism was qualified in a variety of forms which are variously interpreted as angels or messengers, and Zoroaster's universe was populated with evil powers as well as good powers. Now, the only problem with the theory of comparative religion that's always trying to put down Christianity is if Zoroaster is the source of those beliefs, how come they were believing those things before they ever encountered Zoroaster? But there is a historic record that nobody in Iran ever thought of these things until the 10 tribes of Israel carrying the Pentateuch of Moses settled in the same area at the same time that Zoroaster gets his revelations. Just a little speculation. Mine's as good as the other side, I'll tell you that. Now I'm back to Zara. If you were there, not only telling the stories around the campfire that could catch the imagination of a young lad of an Iranian tribe, and as they go to the north through the Caucasus Mountains, he stays there and tries to duplicate in his life the experiences of the great Zalmoxis, Moses, the chief leader. Only he does what the leader of the Taiping Rebellion did. He preempts to himself the identity with the prophet Moses and forms the new religion with his own claims of revelation. They were there, friends. But if you were there, that's the question. What if you were there? And you knew that Moses' prophecies had come true and you'd lost your kingdom because of it. You remembered the prophecies of Hosea that not my people would be your state, and not obtaining mercy would be your state, but one day somewhere God would remember and return you again. And you remembered the prophecy that if you're going to have a king, you better be a descendant of David. Where are you going to turn? What if Judah's other son, Zara, what if his descendants had settled in the northern kingdom? What if there were some descendants of Zara around? They would be the only candidates for a throne. Right or wrong? Well, who are these people? Let's follow Zara around. He just left dangling in Matthew and dangling in Genesis 39. What if we can find that the descendants, let's go to Psalm 88. During the great days of the kingdom, when David was the king, a lot of psalms were written, but he didn't write them all. Let's go to Psalm 88. And let's go to 1 Chronicles 2:6 first. 1 Chronicles 2:6 in this little detective story we're doing. See what I can find there. Wish I had my torn up Bible. It's all marked. I ought to redo that Bible and print it over for all of you with my notes in it. These are the sons of Israel. Chapter 2, 1 Chronicles 2. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, Dan, Joseph, and Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, the sons of Judah, and Onan, and Shelah, which three were born unto him of the daughter of Shua the Canaanitess, and Ur the firstborn of Judah was evil in the sight of the Lord, and he slew him. And Tamar, his daughter-in-law, bore him Pharez and Zerah. All the sons of Judah were five. The sons of Pharez, Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Zerah, Zimri and Ethan, and Heman and Calcol and Dara. Five of them in all. Well, that is interesting, isn't it? Five from Zara and two from Pharez. That means we got a lot more people to trace the lineage of Judah through. Right? Now let's just keep going. Zara had five sons. Now let's go to 1 Kings 4. Verse. Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots, 12,000 horsemen. So they weren't any slouches as horsemen, were they? And those officers provided victuals for the king Solomon, barley and straw for the horses. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much in largeness of heart, even as the sand on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman and Chalcol, and Darda the sons of Mahol. And his fame was in all nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 5,005. Now, you know what that just said to you? That you can't really credit Solomon with his wisdom by just saying he's wiser than anybody in Asia and wiser than anybody in Egypt. The real clincher is when you say he's wiser than these individuals' names, which if you check just back, just happened to be the sons of Zerah. They became so synonymous with wisdom that you couldn't really credit Solomon with all his wisdom until you could finally say, well, he might not be the smartest to just say he's smarter than Egypt and everybody in Asia, but when you say he's smarter than the sons of Zerah, that's it for him. He's right. Now, it just so happens that this 88th and 89th Psalm are written. Now, my Bible gives the 87th Psalm for chorus. Skip it. Psalm 88 is for the sons of Korah, but it is written by Heman the Ezrahite and Ethan the Ezrahite. These marvelous psalmists are sons and descendants of Zara. You got that, friends? What I'm trying to tell you is that Zara isn't somebody that the tribes of Israel don't know about. The sons of Zara became noted for wisdom and psalm writing. But the line of Pharez produced the king. Now, we can't find a king in our midst. You've already answered me. What if you were in Caspian, Tigris River territory, and you're looking for a king? Who would you look for? A descendant of David. There ain't none. What's your next choice? You got it, Wes. A descendant of Judah. If I look around and there's nobody of David's reign, at least I can go behind him. And behind David, and elevate Moses, chief leader and revere him and put somebody on the throne that is of the line of Judah. None of David's sons, they're down in Judah. But what if a descendant of Zerah, noted for wisdom, noted as a psalmist, dwells with the ten tribes? What are these names of these sons again? 1 Chronicles 2:6. Somebody read them to me quickly. 1 Chronicles 2:6. Who are these kids of Zara? Shout it out, unless I beat you to it. Zimri! That's the one you're thinking of, isn't it? You know that Zimri, a guy named Zimri, defeated and overthrew Baasha, one of the kings of the ten tribes, and ruled in his stead? You know that fact? If you read the Chronicles of the Kings, and all the kings of the northern tribes, suddenly some guy named Zimri shows up and defeats him and sets up his own kingdom. Doesn't last long. The Bible shows that every promise of God, somebody tries to encompass it in his own flesh before God works it out in his own way. Jacob tried to encompass the birthright his way before God did it God's way. Abraham and Sarah tried to encompass the promise their way before God did it his way. It's speculation, not fact, but it's very akin to the pattern of Scripture that a Zimri of the Zerah line, that were the true firstborn life coming out before Pharaoh, denied the throne because Pharaoh came out and became the line of the breach. If you were a descendant of Zerah, why would you stay in Judah? You've lost your chance there. Pharaoh's line has the throne. There's opportunity for you in the intrigues of those courts. I wouldn't feel safe if I were a descendant of Zara living in the kingdom of Judah with the successors to Solomon. They're a bunch of rats. Get out. Go north. You're respected for your psalm singing, your psalm writing, and your wisdom. It's entirely possible that that Zimri was one trying to encompass the right of rulership that is the scepter of Judah in his own strength. But I just ask you, what if over there between the Caspian Sea and the Tigris River, lacking a seed of David, a son descendant of the line of Zara, noted for wisdom and psalm writing, was with the tribes? If you can't put David up, you can put Judah up through Zara. Sheer speculation. I'm just asking you, if you were voting, who would you vote for as a king? If there's a tribe of Zara descendant there, lacking anybody from Judah other than Zara, and lacking any descendant of David, who would you vote for? It makes sense, doesn't it? It's just speculation. It is entirely possible that there is with these tribes of the seed of Judah . Where's David got his throne? Now, these daughters of Zedekiah are descendants of David. It is entirely possible that the descendants of Zara are in the northern kingdom, because we don't hear a thing about them in the southern kingdom, and yet they're dangling out there for some reason in Matthew's genealogy. I ain't done with Zara yet. I haven't got David on a throne yet, or his seed. Now, what if... I left you a little interesting sidelight out of Jewish theology. As we were reading in Ezekiel from one of the rabbis' commentaries, I left you sort of standing there one night about their tradition of Messiah ben Joseph, the Messiah son of Joseph, that they teach must precede the Messiah ben Judah, which is Christ, the Messiah. And their teaching is that Messiah ben Joseph will be killed in the battle of the war against Gog and Magog. I'm going to give you something else to sort of upset your sleep a little. Oh, by the way, you know, in Matthew 15, it became a tradition already circulated that John the Baptist had risen from the dead. Herod did that in the 14th chapter earlier. So it was not unusual for people to think that John the Baptist had raised from the dead, because that rumor was being circulated by Herod. When Jesus said to his disciples, "Whom do men say that I am?" Remember that question? Has it ever puzzled you that the answer that comes back is, some say you're John the Baptist? Now, I can explain that one, because Herod had already circulated the rumor that John the Baptist had raised from the dead to explain the miracles of Jesus. So that one's okay. What are the other two, you remember? Some say Elijah, and oh, there's one other one named. Jeremiah. Yeah, go read it. Jeremiah. Now, I can explain John the Baptist, because it was a rumor circulating. I can explain Elijah, because it was in their tradition that the forerunner of the Messiah would be of the spirit of Elijah, and Elijah never died. So in their tradition, he went up to heaven. How do you explain Jeremiah? Except that there is no record in any of their scriptures, no knowledge of any place that Jeremiah died. He just disappeared from their scenario. Isn't that funny? Funny little things in God's book. Let me put this, keep you awake. You know, I'm just taking on these idiots that figure that Christianity is for the vacant-headed. You got to have a little bit of smarts. You got to have a little bit of smarts to study God's Word. Now I want you to notice, in Ezekiel 45, we're in the millennium. The land has been apportioned, I opened with that tonight, to the tribes of Israel. So we know that they aren't all lost to God. Right? A portion shall be, verse 7, a portion shall be for the prince on the one side, and on the other side of the oblation of the holy portion and of the possession of the city. And the land shall be his possession in Israel. My princes shall no more oppress my people. And the rest of the land shall they give to the house of Israel according to their tribes. Verse 16. All the people of the land shall give this oblation for the prince in Israel. Know what it says or not? And it shall be the prince's part to give burnt offerings and meat offerings and drink offerings and the feasts and the new moons and the Sabbaths and all the solemnities of the house of Israel. He shall prepare the sin offering and the meat offering and the burnt offering and the peace offering to make reconciliation for the house of Israel. 19th verse, the priest shall take the blood of the sin offering. If you want to see some theological gyrations, read a few commentaries on this prince. This is a millennium. Jesus has already come. He set up his kingdom. He's ruling. Who's this prince?